Of course I do, Mr. Bagthorpe snapped ungratefully. And I also have perfectly good eyesight. Kindly allow me to be the judge of what I saw and did not saw. I mean, see. Well, sir, the sergeant moved toward the door. We'd best be off and pursue our inquiries. You do that, Mr. Bagthorpe told him. The police left, and Jack followed them with Zero in case Mr. Bagthorpe renewed his attack. Zero had never had very much self-confidence, and it was constantly being shaken by Mr. Bagthorpe's slights and jeers, which Jack was convinced Zero understood. Zero's ears drooped when he felt sad and undermined, and Jack would give him long pep talks to try and get them up again. Even now that Zero was a household word and had a fan club, his position in the family had not really altered. "Don't take any notice, old chap," Jack told Zero as they turned the corner of the house and made down the garden toward the meadow beyond. "He's just jealous." Mr. Bagthorpe wrote scripts for television, and most weeks Zero had more screen time than he did. Also, Mr. Bagthorpe did not have a fan club or have life-size posters made of him. It was late March, and wind and sun blew over the meadow in giant waves, and Jack raced the clouds in the direction of the village, stopping every now and then to throw something for Zero to fetch. Every time Zero fetched, Jack patted and praised him, and after a while the ears seemed to pick up a little. This made Jack himself feel better. Jack's own confidence was never very high. He was the sole ordinary person, with the exception of Grandpa, who was deaf and did not really notice, in a family of what were certainly eccentrics, if not, as they themselves claimed, geniuses. They all had several fields in which they excelled, and these were known, in a phrase coined by Mrs. Bagthorpe, as strings to their bows. William, for instance, had four strings to his bow: electronics, mathematics, tennis, and playing on the drums. Tess also had four, including reading Voltaire in the original, and a black belt in judo. And even Rosie, who was only nine, had four definite, and one almost. Jack, on the other hand, had none. He had once, with Uncle Parker's connivance, made a bid to convince his family that he was endowed with supernatural power, and was, among other things, a prophet. This scheme had started off well enough, but ended by his being found out in a dramatic denouement at Rosie's birthday party. The rest of the Bagthorpes did not exactly despise Jack for his lack of achievement, but they did tend to treat him in a patronizing way. They did not see him as an equal. Jack's present motive in going to the village was firstly to remove himself and Zero as far as possible from Mr. Bagthorpe, and secondly to visit the shop, where Zero would be much patted and praised by anyone who happened to be in there. Nobody had ever patted and praised Zero before the Buried Bones commercial, but now everybody did it. Jack was not disappointed. There were several people in there, including one of Mrs. Fosdyke's special cronies, Mrs. Pye. All transactions came to a standstill while Zero was thoroughly patted and favorably commented on. Mrs. Pye herself had done a complete about-face in her estimation of Zero, and now kept proclaiming, almost belligerently, "I should like anyone to show me another dog that could have made that film like this dog did." Before, she used to say that Zero had great dirty paws and was stupid. Unfortunately, two of the people present in the shop were a photographer and reporter from the Isham Gazette, who had learned from the police that the dog involved in the Bagthorpe burglary was the nationwide favorite starring in the Buried Bones commercial. Jack did not know this because they did not introduce themselves. The photographer purchased a tin of tobacco as a front for his being in the shop, and then followed Jack and Zero out, and took a photograph of Jack unawares. Of Zero unawares. Jack was used by now to complete strangers coming up and taking photographs of Zero, and did not realize that anything untoward was afoot, until the reporter caught up and fell into step beside him. He introduced himself and began to ask questions about the part Zero had played in the burglary. "Did he sound the alarm?" he asked hopefully, already visualizing his headline, "Buried Bones Bagthorpe Beats Burglar." "Not exactly," replied Jack truthfully. "He would have done, normally, but he was worn out. He'd been rabbiting all day." "Caught many, did he?" asked the reporter, mentally changing his headline, and reluctantly realizing he would have to relinquish the alliteration. "He doesn't try to catch them," replied Jack with dignity. "He just chases them. He's anti-blood sports." He gradually found himself telling the reporter where Zero had been during the faithful night, and what the fateful night, and what he had been doing. Zero had been so praised since his Buried Bones commercial that it simply did not occur to Jack that Zero could ever receive any adverse publicity. He found his mistake the following morning when he was shown the front page of the Isham Gazette, which featured a photograph of Zero trying to keep his balance while scratching his right ear with his right paw under a headline that read, "Buried Bones Bagthorpe Bungles Burglary." Jack's own fury was matched only by Mr. Bagthorpe's. The latter had just received a telephone call from Uncle Parker congratulating him on the story and implying that he, Mr. Bagthorpe, had been responsible for it. "Let's face it, if you are a writer, any publicity is good publicity, eh, Henry?" he had said, just before Mr. Bagthorpe slammed down the receiver. "And describing that pudding-footed disaster as a Bagthorpe," he fumed, "as if I'd spawned the thing. I'll sue." Grandma, seeing her chance for revenge, picked up her cue neatly. "He is a part of this household," she told him, "and so quite legitimately described as a Bagthorpe. There are no grounds whatever for libel. You should learn to take yourself less seriously, Henry." Jack, following his usual evasive strategy, took Zero for a walk in the meadow, but later this proved to be a mistake. Just as the Bagthorpes were finishing lunch that day, the original pair of policemen knocked on the door. The local constabulary had evidently run out of available manpower. They had found, they said, with the aid of a trained Alsatian dog, the missing property. The noisy and exultant reactions to this intelligence were cut short when the Bagthorpes came to understand the exact nature of the discovery. All the missing items had been found in a large sack, dumped by the wicket gate that led from the garden into the meadow. Everything was intact, except that all the portraits and photographs had been taken from their frames and were bundled up loosely. It was obvious, the policeman said, that the burglar had expected to find large sums of money secreted behind them. Never, in their experience, they said, had any burglar so promptly returned stolen goods, and certainly never before had the thief left a note similar to the one attached by a safety pin to the top of the sack. It read, "I would have burned this lot of rubbish, but the missus said it would clog the grate. It was a dirty trick to stoop to. Yours faithfully, Disgusted." This message was printed in full in the following day's Isham Gazette, together with a humiliating account of where and how it had been found. On reading it, Mr. Bagthorpe said, "That does it. We shall all have to leave the district. And why, in the name of all that's wonderful, did not that numb-nosed hound of yours sniff it out when he went past?" Jack and Zero went for another walk.